You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. At Whole Foods Market, we offer premium products without premium prices. Our everyday value items are free of artificial preservatives, colors, flavors, sweeteners, and hydrogenated fats. Priced competitively to average supermarket prices, the 365 Everyday Value brand offers food that meets our strict quality standards. Compare our peanut butter, canned beans, and cereals to the other guys. You'll see what we're talking about. Visit one of our six Manhattan stores in Tribeca, Bowery, Union Square, Chelsea, Columbus Circle, or the Upper West Side. Open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information, visit www.wholefoodsmarket.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food, culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farm, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking food headlines, duo dishes, and type and tail. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we have a live call-in number, folks. Our number is 718-497-2128. It's time for our monthly roundup of food headlines. First up, USAtoday.com posted an article about 5 days ago titled "Restaurants Want a Piece of the Food Stamp Pie." So there are a number of businesses back in 2010, according to this article, that were accepted to receive food stamps. And the article goes on and on a little bit to say that Louisville-based companies Yum Brands, who owns Taco Bell, KFC, Long John Silver's, and Pizza Hut, they're trying to get their restaurants in the mix. They're essentially lobbying the government so folks can use their food stamps to buy some screwed up food. How do I feel about this? It's kind of about how I feel about the I think we can put this argument in the same argument as banning the soda ban in New York City. I see some people try to lump this in there. I definitely think that we need to expand the food stamp program and the WIC program. There are some restrictions on the WIC program, which you can and cannot buy. I don't know if we need to be expanding into fast food commodity spots. This is a fail. I think it's a complete and total fail. What do you think? Do you think that the government should extend the food stamp program to fast food joints? We already know that most of the fast food spots traditionally are in low-income neighborhoods. Here in New York City, the vast majority of fast food spots are either located in the neighborhood of Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn, Harlem, and I then think number three, in no article and order, the Bronx has the highest concentration. So if you live in those areas, send me a note. Let me know what you think. I think it's a fail.
Do you think they're going to limit what you can eat? You know,
I don't know. I think it's going to be a catch for all, Jack. I think they're going to say, use your food stamps and people just go in there and buy whatever. I mean, I get the argument that they're trying to make food more accessible, but I mean, 99 cent everything. I think it's not the best decision. I think that the sources and that could be expanded into Providing more health bucks, which is just like doubling your food stamps at farmers markets and all that good stuff. Definitely not to this. So if you have any comments about that, we should bring somebody on and talk about that more in depth. I'm very curious to do some more research and see what are the other businesses that are already on the list. Second up, Growing Power receives $1 million grant from Walmart. The Milwaukee Business Times on September 6th headline, Walmart to donate $1 million to Growing Power. Quote, Walmart execs will join Will Allen on Friday, which was September 9th, to announce a grant of $1 million from the Walmart Foundation to help Growing Power strengthen 20 community food centers in more than 15 states. Actually, I just left Milwaukee. I was at a Growing Power gathering, Growing Food and Justice for All gathering that they have every year, which is a small conference or gathering centered around food justice and with a focus on people of color and diversity. And there was not any direct mention from Will Allen about Walmart. He did say in the opening remarks that we need everyone at the table. And we can't just, this is a movement that we can't exclude certain people. We can't exclude politicos. We can't exclude corporations. Everyone has to be at the table to solve the problem. So he said that he did not directly reference Walmart. I think earlier that day was the day of the press conference. And I did see that they posted photos from the press conference, and he also posted an official statement, because so many people that obviously that he respects sent him letters saying, why are you essentially taking money from Walmart, or messages. So on the Growing Power Facebook page, you can actually see comments from people. My position on this, and if you follow me on Twitter at Food Cultures, you've probably already seen my comments, is that I totally trust Will Allen. I absolutely despise Walmart. I'm not a Walmart fan, but I trust Will Allen that he will not sell his soul or sell his organization's soul to Walmart. I feel like Growing Power does not need Walmart to survive, and that if things get funky, this is exactly what I said on Twitter, that they could walk away. And I feel like there's so many people on the ground that are looking at this partnership or this grant, that if things get sticky, he would walk away from that. I do feel confident in that. I've seen the center. They're doing a ton of great things there in a little space, and involved in so many projects in the Milwaukee area. And in 15 states, they have a regional training center right here in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm okay with it. I mean, I'm going to keep it real. I'm okay with it. I hate Walmart, but I'm okay with it, because I understand that I understand his philosophy, and I understand what he's trying to do. Tell me what you think. Call in if you're listening. What do you think? Should Growing Power should they take the money or give back the money to Walmart? Let me know. Next food headline. Let's see. This is really not a food headline, but just a shout out. LA Times did a great article about Alice Waters and Shay Panisse celebrating their 40th anniversary. If you have not seen the gorgeous book, the book is a book that's celebrating the 40th anniversary of Shay Panisse. It's not a book of recipes. It's actually just a book of stories. One of my favorite ones in there is Alice writes about Etna Lewis and meeting her in New York City and cooking together, and has a gorgeous picture of her in there that a lot of people have seen. And the book is great. And I'm glad to see that people are talking about Miss Waters being in business for 40 years. Pick up the book if you want to read a bunch of profiles about folks who worked there, people who've influenced the Shay Panisse concept. Next food headline. People who are listening, if you don't live on the East Coast, farmers along the East Coast and in New York City are still suffering from Hurricane Irene. And if you Google Hurricane Irene, if you go upstate New York and read the local newspapers there, folks are devastated. Cows, entire crops are gone. Farmers really don't know when they'll recover or how to recover. I think the FDA ruled last week that even when the water goes down, none of the fruits and vegetables can be used to sell. So it's basically a wash for a lot of farmers. But a group of people here in New York City have banded together. And on September 25th, 2011, participating New York City restaurants will give up 10% of their sales to Just Food and Grow NYC to benefit New York area farmers hit hard by the hurricane. You can go to Dine Out Irene. So if you live in the New York area, go there. There are a list of great restaurants. You have Bark Hot Dog, where you can literally go get a hot dog for $5. It's Chowder House, which is right in at Columbus Circle. Jimmy's 43, who has a show here on Heritage Radio Network. You have the Meat Hook, the guys over at the Meat Hook, Rubicella's Cupcakes. The list goes on and on. So no matter how small or big your pockets are, you can go and help supporter and support farmers in New York City. Finally, my final food headline of the month is Chicago soul food disappearing. Chicago soul food disappearing as blacks leave. This was posted in the Huffington Post. Great article published on 9/6/11. Basically talking about the great reverse migration, as I call it. So many people from northern states are deciding to move back down south. And with that said, folks are closing up their soul food spots. Check this article out. It's a great article. And it just shows that food traditions, black, white, Jewish, whoever you are, need to be preserved. Huffington Post. And you can search Chicago soul food to read the entire article. All right, folks. That is this month's food headlines. Join us next month. We'll do the same thing. Quick snippets of the headlines. Keep listening. We're going to take a short break and come back with the duo Dishes. Learn to trust, not run away.
It was no time to play.
We build it up
and build it up
and build it up.
And now it's solid. Solid.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. Hot Grease loves food bloggers. On the phone, we have the super talented, fabulous LA base food bloggers Amir Thomas and Crystal Baker. Guys, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, Nicole.
Thank you.
So my first question, I guess I'm going to ask Amir this question first. Two cooks in the kitchen. I've cooked with my friends, and sometimes it's a disaster or it's a pleasant experience. What are some of the physical and personality challenges of having two people that are blogging together about food?
That's a great question. We get that. People ask us that question a lot. I actually would have had to say it's a corny response, but there's really not many challenges for us together in the kitchen. It just, for us, it feels like we have, you know, an extension of an extra set of hands and an extra set of taste buds, and just, it just works. While Crystal is typing, chopping, or dicing something, I might be stirring or browning meat or, you know, doing something else. And there's a lot of tasting when we cook, so there's a lot of passing the spoon back and forth to see if it needs more this or add a little bit more of that. So for me, like, it's great when Chris and I are together in the kitchen. It's just like I said, it just helps us to divide and conquer that much more efficiently. And we have fun too. You know, we're always drinking.
Wine. Drinks are good.
The music on. So we, you know, we try to keep it fun for us. And yeah, there's no drama or no really any challenges. I don't know if Crystal has anything that she.
Well, let me ask you this, Crystal. Now, you know, in New York, everyone has one of the reasons why I asked the question is because people here, this kitchen space is so small. It's physically hard for me to cook with two other people here in New York. So do you guys have a large kitchen space, and do you rotate? Are you at Amir's, or are you at your apartment sometimes?
Yeah, we do go back and forth. And I will say that I have cooked in a New York kitchen before, a one-person kitchen, Thanksgiving meal with another friend, and it was difficult. So we have been lucky to not really have that problem. We both have different size kitchens and different shaped kitchens. Mine's kind of long and skinny, and Amir's is more like rectangular size and inset. So usually, like, it's pretty easy to bounce around and move around and slide by and, you know, make sure you don't bump somebody with the refrigerator door while they're stirring the soup or whatever. But it's not too bad. I guess we're both lucky to live in California and have sizable kitchens. I know we'd both probably like to have those huge open-air kitchens with an island in the middle and our Viking stoves and all that kind of stuff.
I know, right?
So I guess that'll come down the line.
So, Crystal, I have to ask you, you guys started your blog back in 2008, correct?
Right.
What was the online food blogging community like then? And how do you feel like it's grown now? And do you feel the love all the time from the food blogging community?
I do feel like it's grown. It's different. When we started in 2008, I was just kind of reading blogs on my own, you know, so I wasn't in the community to really know about the community. But I realized that there were a lot of people doing this, and there were a lot of people commenting, so it seemed like people had an interest in reading about recipes and food experimentation. So when we started, we got a lot of really fun, nice, kind, sweet feedback from people, like random emails and comments on our blog. So it felt very, you know, welcoming, and it felt like people were just very uplifting and happy to talk about food all the time. And it's been nice now to kind of branch out, not just from blogging, but to work with people in various aspects of the food community, because you really realize it's a very tight-knit community, especially as local food and organic food and food practices and sustainability and food justice have all kind of become bigger topics. I think that's made some of the food community a little bit stronger. I can be honest and say that there still seems to be some, like, stratified activity sometimes within the food blogging community, and I guess that's just how things are, whatever group you're in. But for the most part, you know, you find the people that you really like genuinely and that really like you genuinely, and you can make great contact with people not just online but in the real world with them too.
Totally. You guys have been featured, Amir, in three cookbooks? Or is it two or three?
Yeah, three.
Yeah, I think it's three, yes.
What are the three titles?
The first one was 55 Knives. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Well, it was,
you probably have them in front of you.
55 Knives. which was an e-cookbook that was 55 knives, and it was put on by this guy named Nick. His blog is machismo.com. Second one was the Foodista Vesta food blog cookbook, and then the third one was America I Am Pass It Down cookbook.
So, Amir, when are y'all, I have to ask this question. When are you guys, working on a cookbook? Because you have a ton of recipes.
We do have so many recipes. We definitely are interested in doing cookbook. I think we're just trying to figure out, you know, when's a good time to, you know, to do it and what exactly we want to do, bring something different, you know, to it. But we definitely have talked about it, and we definitely have kind of drafted things up, and we're still, you know, kind of just figuring out what recipes we would want to, you know, put in it if we did, and perfect the other recipes that we've tried before. I think definitely something that we will do down the line. It's just a matter of, like I said, just figuring out, you know, what exactly we want to say and what kind of cookbook we want to do instead of just, like, have a, you know, a collection of recipes. Because there are so many different kinds that we have. So,
speaking of recipes and food, so you guys were featured in the American I Am book, which is basically a collection or celebratory book around the African-American food experience. In my previous segment, I talked a little bit about an article that was in Huffington Post, the disappearing Chicago soul food scene. Crystal, did you have a chance to read that article, and what are your thoughts?
Of course I did read it. I read it, and I thought that was really interesting. I just had a conversation with somebody, actually a writer for another publication, about how large groups of African Americans were moving from some of the urban cities up north and northeast and the Midwest down to the South again. And I hadn't really thought about how that would have an impact on restaurants, so smaller mom-pop, soul food, whatever it might be, just black-owned restaurants. So that article, that whole idea was really interesting to see how that aspect of culture in terms of those cities, like a city like Chicago where the black culture is very strong, to see that aspect of it diminishing and dwindling. I think it's unfortunate. A lot of the points that were brought up in terms of, you know, people eating healthier and making the move, migrating, and just the general case of the economy, that all really, really made sense. And, you know, I'm not sure how to turn that around now. I'm not sure how it can be turned around right now, but I definitely think that, you know, it's possible to kind of keep them strong, but it's all about the community and putting that money or that focus back into that aspect of the community.
Totally. Starting with Amir, I want to end with you guys. You know, I know you guys get that sunny weather all year round, but fall is like two or three weeks away here. Well, not even two. I think the 23rd is the first day of fall. Give us, the listeners, a few of your recipe recommendations. I'm calling it the Hanging on the Summer recipe recommendations from your blog that they can find on theduodishes.com.
Absolutely. Well, I would say, well, two things. I would say that, one, this summer we made this these beef short ribs with Red Stag, which is a black cherry whiskey liqueur, which is absolutely amazing. And if you don't have a grill, or if, you know, if it's too hot to light the fire, you can always just braise them in the oven, is what we did. So that way you still get that summer kind of grill flavor, that, you know, those ribs that feel, they're just falling off the bone, and they're just absolutely amazing. And then also I would say, like, Crystal and I mean, maybe in California we are spoiled with the nice weather, but if you want to hang on to the summer, like, we love going out, you know, to happy hours or even to brunches where you can sit outside on a nice patio and, you know, endless mimosas and just, you know, enjoy the afternoon. So, like, that's always a great thing to do if the weather permits, you know, of course. But, you know, maybe if you're in a nice area, there's definitely, like, lots of things to go out. Sometimes, especially in, I know, Crystal up in the valley where it's, like, 100 degrees, it's kind of too much to light the oven. Sometimes it's better just to go out and just relax in the patio somewhere and kick back.
So, Crystal, what are your recommendations where folks can go to the blog and get a...
Yeah, I have a couple. Last year we did something really fun, these orange Jello shots. You just did them inside of an orange and filled it with Jello and a little bit of vodka in there. So when you slice it up, you end up with these little orange slices, and you can just take those. Those are really fun for the summertime. Just made ice cream all day long. So we just had a strawberry white balsamic ice cream that was on the blog actually last week. Very delicious, very easy. There's no eggs, so it's a no-cook ice cream, very fast.
And something fun and light, if you're just, you know, it's just too hot and you want to take advantage of all the nice fruits. I juiced for a while, and I made apple, peach, and beet juice that was really, really good, really filling, very like, bright. You just felt alive and vibrant afterwards. So that's a really nice, fun way to kind of end out the summer with the fruits.
And can everyone find, what is your website again? Because I said the Duo Dishes, but I think it's just duodishes.com.
It is. So the website is just duodishes.com, and on Twitter we're the Duo Dishes, just like Facebook, the Duo Dishes. But the website is just duodishes.com.
Cool. Crystal, Amir, thank you guys for coming on Hot Grease. You got to come to New York City.
When
you
come to New York City.
Absolutely.
Heritage Radio Network, Roberta's, come by, come in the studio, have some great pizza. But until then, you guys have a great week and chat with you soon.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yes, thank you so much. Have a great one.
You too. Listeners, keep listening. We'll be back with Tanya Fields from The Black Project.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
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 What we need all over this world today, tomorrow, and each and every time seen. So I need to be ready to tell them that strength up, unification is the key to all freedom and prosperity. Cause we are free man. No, who say we are free man? Free man. No, who say we are free man? Yeah. Hey. UNITY. UNITY.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. This program is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Remember show and tell in grade school? Here on Hot Grease, we have the grown-up version, type and tell. In this segment, we shout out the latest food discovery on the phone to tell us about the Bronx Grub Project pop-up event in Lower Manhattan is Tanya Fields. Ms. Fields is the executive director of the Black Project. Tanya, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me, Nicole.
So, the Black Project is spelled B-L-K-P-R-O-J-E-K.
Yes, it is.
What is the Black Project, and why did you decide to give that different spelling of the name?
So, the Black Project is a nonprofit organization, or rather, we are currently going through the process of incorporating as a nonprofit, and I gave it that spelling really sort of as homage to my roots of sort of growing up in the quote-unquote hood and sort of a throwback to graffiti. And as I now live in the Bronx and previously grew up in ungentrified Harlem, I was surrounded and long admired sort of graffiti. And so that's sort of where the spelling of the name came from.
So I want to ask you a question. Some people have so many myths and stereotypes about the Bronx. And I say the Bronx because I know you New Yorkers like to make sure people not just say Bronx and it has to be the Bronx. But what are some of the biggest myths that you like to say, you know what, that's not true about the Bronx, particularly around the food system?
Just a broad generalizations is that the Bronx is still sort of this Mad Max sort of terrain where, you know, we're all in the mode of self-survival and walking around with weapons and all at risk of being a victim and or a perpetrator of a crime. In terms of some of the myths around the food system in the Bronx, it's probably that we have nothing to add to sort of the culinary palette of this city. And while we have our struggles really with food justice and food sovereignty in this borough, there is a rich Black and brown community here that has absolutely contributed to the culinary history of New York City.
So one of the projects that your organization has developed is called the Bronx Grub Project. Mm-hmm. And you guys have already had one grub dinner, correct?
We've had three so far.
Oh, three. So you got to tell me, what was on the menu at some of the, at a few of the dinners?
So we had one in March, and that was a dinner. And we had Green Eat Catering, run by a good friend and amazing chef, Judith Rudge. And I encourage anyone to look her up, greeneatcatering.com. And she made a wonderful sweet potato souffle. We had sort of a rosemary baked chicken, a mesclun salad, and a steamed broccoli and cauliflower. And then in June, we had a family day or Father's Day breakfast. So we did a breakfast and not a dinner. And that was my famous meaning in my home for my children, blueberry pancake recipe, which has flaxseed and whole wheat pancakes and has to be served with a maple syrup blend. We had wonderful pork shoulder supplied by Heritage Foods, which I'm sure everyone who's listening is aware of through your radio show.
The best pork in the world, Heritage Foods USA.
And let me tell you something, that when you get, people talk a lot about the difference in taste and whether or not it's a myth. It is not a myth. To have a, you know, sustainably raised, humanely slaughtered pig, it was like butter. It just melted in your mouth. We heard so much about that pig. It was ridiculous.
We'll have to let Pratchett know that. So you're bringing this same Bronx Grub Project to Lower Manhattan, actually to the BMW Guggenheim Lab. Some people who are just hearing about the BMW Guggenheim Lab, they're located, it's a pop-up thing that's happening at the, I'm about to screw up the location. So right across from, guess what? The Whole Foods on Bowery, who is actually sponsoring today's show. But tell me more about this pop-up event, the time, the date, and what are your goals and what are you planning to achieve by bringing the Bronx to Lower Manhattan?
So I'll kind of answer it in reverse a little bit. Our hope in bringing this to Manhattan is really to, in some ways, break down maybe some of the myths and perceptions of the Bronx, that we don't know how to get it in, that we don't know how to get down, that we can't do a chic when we absolutely can. It's about, one, also raising the visibility of my organization so that we are not pigeonholed as just a Bronx-based organization, that we are starting to be seen as an organization that looks at food justice all across the board, but also not just food justice, but also understanding that that also includes making sure that we support and in our futures we expand, incubate food businesses that include people of color. I heard you mention earlier in the show about folks that are migrating and how we may be losing a piece of culinary history with folks leaving the city. What the nuts and bolts of when it's happening. So it's going to be at the BMW Guggenheim Lab, which is located at East Houston and First Street. It is going to be this Saturday, September 17th, from 12 to 2 is when we'll be serving our food samples.
Is this a free event, Tanya?
Absolutely free.
Okay.
If you show up, we will feed you.
So folks who are listening, we have folks all over the country that listen to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. What is your website? I know you were featured recently in the Atlanta Post as one of, was it 7 or 10 Black environmentalists in the country? Congrats to you on that. You're doing great work.
Thank you.
How can folks find you?
So they can find us at our website, which is the, T-H-E, Black, B-L-K, Project, P-R-O-J-E-K.org, all one word, no spaces, no underscores. They can, if they want, Google Tanya Fields, South Bronx, and a plethora of information will show up. And they can find us on Facebook. We are facebook.com/blackproject. We are on Twitter, which is twitter.com/theblackproject. So we are out there. If they want to find us, Tanya Fields, The Black Project, Tanya Fields, South Bronx, and they can get to us.
You heard it, people. Type and tell everyone about The Black Project. Tanya Fields, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease. I look forward to seeing you soon and collaborating with you soon. Have a great week.
You too.
Listeners, thank you for listening to Hot Grease. Join me next Monday live at 3:30 on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Makes no difference what group I'm in.
This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.